Right now, it's time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur, good morning.
Good morning. Speaking of home chef.
Yes.
I have a home chef living in my building. She's from Singapore, young woman, who has jettisoned a first career to become a second career home chef. She's a personal chef. Anyway, we talk food all the time, as you can imagine. She has a cute little dog that is the first thing that stopped me when they moved in, and her extremely tall husband. So I didn't know this man was her husband because Joanne is only about 5 feet tall, if that much. And this man that I met out in front of the building was 6'5". Didn't seem to go together, but they do. And I say to Sam, you know, welcome to the building. This is a few years ago. Welcome to the building. I'm your neighbor on the other side. And I said, where did you live before here? And he said, oh, we're from Singapore. And the movie had just come out, so I, of course, had to ask him, are you one of those crazy rich Asians? And he said, in a very New York way, I have to add. He said, not so crazy. Anyway, this affluence has let Joanne follow her dream, which is to cook. Anyway, the main dish of Singapore, I've been to Singapore, let me say that, and the main dish of Singapore is something called, in Singapore, Hainanese chicken and rice. Now, Hainan, H-A-I-N-A-N, is the southernmost island of China. It's part of the People's Republic of China. The southern part of Hainan is tropical. Well, let me say this. The island is tropical, but the southern end of the island has apparently, I have not been, very luxurious resorts with beaches, with white sandy beaches. Sounds good to me. I like looking at it, even though I don't like going in the ocean. But anyway, some point, a Hainanese Han Chinese emigrated to Malaysia and Singapore. And even though this dish is, I'm sure, made in Hainan, it is the signature dish of Singapore and Malaysia. So I go to Singapore, and Singapore is a great eating town, great. And the primary among the great things are something called hawker bars, which to us would be a food court. They're buildings, or at least indoor spaces, with many food vendors, and the one that I went to, the most famous one, you'd think I'd remember the name, started with an H, too, because I remember it was alliterative and hawker, it had no air conditioning. And it also had the most famous place for Hainanese chicken. So Bob and I go, and we were on a cruise, and we went with some friends who we'd made on the cruise, and they were meeting a young Singaporean woman who had gone to college with their kid back home. So the young woman was Singaporean but educated in the U.S. So we're all sitting around. I had to wait a half an hour online in 100-degree weather, no air conditioning in the hawker bar, just to get this one plate of poached chicken with rice. It's special, I have to say. I'll get to the details in a sec. So I bring it back to the table, and I say, this is very good, to the table at large. But, you know, I could get this in Brooklyn without waiting a half an hour in 100-degree weather. It'll be in an air-conditioned restaurant, and a waiter will bring it to the table. So the young woman from Singapore was totally disbelieving that I could possibly get anything like this in Brooklyn. And you probably can get it in Manhattan, too. So anyway, Joanne tells me this is her specialty, Hainanese chicken, and with the rice. And, of course, being on a practically no-carb diet, certainly I don't allow myself much rice. Every once in a while, I have like a quarter of a cup if I'm eating something that I really, really got to eat some rice with. And I must say that on my ketogenic diet, I don't miss pasta as much as I miss bread, which I do indulge in. Now I've decided one day a week I can have bread. And rice, because there are some cuisines that I love that really you got to have some rice. In fact, if you're Chinese, it's all about the rice. And then the other food is what you send the rice down with, you know, your little bits of other things. And, well, seasoned. So I had Joanne make the Hainanese chicken, and it was going to be my big rice splurge because, in fact, some people just call this Hainanese rice. They feel the rice is more important than the actual chicken. The chicken gets poached. It gets cooked under a simmer, below the heat, below 212 degrees, which is when water or chicken broth begins to simmer. So the end is very, very velvety chicken meat, and very gelatinous and literally melt-in-your-mouth chicken skin. And Joanne says, oh, you know, it's really about the chicken skin. Well, for my American friends who I invited to have this with me for lunch on Saturday, among some other things Joanne made, this was the main event, though. My friends, I think they enjoyed the meat as much as they enjoyed the skin. And judging by the leftovers, now, Joanne had hacked up the chicken into small pieces, and the rice is then cooked in the well-flavored, but not really chickeny, broth that results from cooking the chicken. I'm pretty sure she had scallions and ginger in the broth. But then you cook the rice. Now, I think actually you may soak the rice in the broth before you cook it. I do know that Joanne uses a rice cooker because she's made me rice before. It's always perfect. This was an extremely long grain rice, maybe jasmine rice, and cooked in the broth from the chicken, and just served like that. And what ends up, even though every single grain of rice was separate, Americans love separate rice, every grain was separate, it still had a creamy mouthfeel to it. I'm sure as a result of cooking it with the chicken and had chicken fat that was in the broth. When I make chicken broth, I skim off all the fat, and I actually have some in my freezer right now. I'm going to use it for something on Thanksgiving. I'm not sure what yet. And I call it soup schmaltz. Schmaltz is the fat, because it's not as good as really rendered chicken fat for cooking. It has a very high moisture content. I've skimmed it off the broth. But anyway, I serve lean broth, but this was not, I'm sure, lean broth. The chicken, which is plain, it's like boiled chicken, as I said, though, with this velvety texture, is served with dipping sauces. One that I make myself, and I'm going to give you a recipe for it, is something that we love in this house, and it's scallion ginger sauce. And you make it by just combining scallions, chopped fine, just the white part. I'm going to say I'll say 2 or 3 tablespoons. For 3 tablespoons of chopped scallions, add 1 tablespoon of finely minced ginger. Put that in a heat-proof dish and heat about 3 tablespoons, a quarter of a cup of neutral vegetable oil. Peanut oil is great. Canola oil is great. I don't like mixed vegetable oils as much as some people do. But anyway, any neutral vegetable oil is good. And heat it until it is very hot, almost smoking, but not smoking. And so you have to keep an eye on it. And as soon as it gets that hot, pour it over your chopped scallion and ginger. And I usually add a few drops of soy sauce once it's cooled down to not sizzle. It'll sizzle. In fact, stand back when you add the oil. It'll sizzle a little bit. And that's it. Let it stand, you know, as long as you can. And knowing I'm going to have a chicken to eat it with, or, you know, we love it with plain shrimp, just boiled shrimp. Instead of shrimp cocktail, shrimp with the scallion ginger sauce is delicious. I've even served that at parties. And you can dip it into the sauce. And the other sauce was a chili sauce. I don't know how Joanne makes her chili sauce. You can buy chili sauce. I'm laughing because I was making something and I wanted to use sambal, which is I'm not sure if it's Thai or Southeast Asian general chili paste. And I said to Joanne, oh, what brand of chili paste should I buy? And she said, oh, I make my own. But, you know, she's like that. In fact, I called her the other day and to consult with her on something. And I she said, well, let me call you when I get back to the house. I said, well, where are you? She said, I'm at that. And she told me the new name of the new butcher shop in the neighborhood where, you know how people are these days? Nobody wants to know that a chicken cutlet comes from a chicken. So this shop, which serves a very high-end clientele in Prospect Heights, where, you know, one-bedroom apartments go for $1 million, they sell a lot of chicken backs. In fact, I've been in there mainly to buy chicken backs. I bought one other item that I didn't like, but a neighbor just the other day said, oh, you got to try this or that. Anyway, so she's in there. I said, oh, she said, I'm buying chicken backs to make broth for your rice. So there we go. Chicken broth is like an essential for so many cultures, not just my Jewish household. So anyway, so that was one thing. But we had no leftovers. Joanne makes just enough food. And we had some first courses. And with the Hainanese chicken, which is often served, by the way, with cucumbers, dressed or not dressed. When I got it in Singapore at the Hawker Bar, it's a mound of rice, pieces of cut-up chicken, a little container of chili sauce. I don't even remember them making the scallion ginger sauce. And sliced cucumber. So maybe that's to refresh your palate between bites of chicken with chili sauce, but which is a good idea. But we had smashed cucumber salad. Now, I've eaten this from Joanne before, and after I ate it the first time, I said, Joanne, I'm trying to count the seeds. You have to go over all the seeds with me in this. My friends wiped it out immediately. We had no leftovers of this cucumber salad with all the different seeds, including toasted cumin seeds. So I'm going to have to ask her again for this so that I can actually do it. I'm sure it's not hard to do. You just have to know what combination of things. And the other pickle I do have left over, I was surprised, is pickled wood ear mushrooms. It's a kind of fungus, black fungus. And you buy them dried and you rehydrate them. And then she pickled them. And when she first made this for me some weeks ago, Bob didn't love it because he's not a mushroom lover, a fungus lover the way I am. And I'll eat any fungus almost. Well, I mean, tell me it's not poisonous. I particularly love, and I was swooning about this the other day with Irene, my housekeeper, who's Mexican, and she also swoons and craves huitlacoche, which is a corn fungus. Anyway, back to this pickle. I thought it was like crack. I said, Joanne, this is mushroom crack. You know, I can't stop eating this. I was very happy that Bob didn't like it. So I have some of that left over, but I meant to eat it with the ultimate leftover Hainanese chicken dish, which is fried rice. So I had exactly, that was the only thing left over. Well, not the only, but, you know, I had the mushrooms, 3 cups of rice. Now, the big trick for making really good fried rice is to have day old, at least, leftover cooked, steamed rice. It's if you do take out Chinese, and you could even order, as I have done, an extra rice. It costs nothing. You know, a dollar for an extra quarter rice. Most restaurants won't charge more than that. And then you have it left over the next day, and you could either make rice pudding or fried rice. I opt for the fried rice. So for 3 cups of rice, now, by the way, of course, this rice was very special rice to begin with, and I have to say the fried rice was the most divine I've ever done. And I would, if you guys all remember, I was during a fried rice period a couple of years ago. I couldn't make it often enough because you can do so many different things with it. So I had a green pepper in the veg bin. I used that. I had some scallions. I almost always have scallions in the house. And I actually went out and bought some more, though, because I wanted the green part, and my greens were not really usable. But even if all you have is the white end, you can use it in here, in fried rice. I also cut up a shallot, a big shallot, because I wanted more onion flavor, but I didn't want to use a whole onion. And I had the little bit of leftover chicken. My friends ate all the good pieces. What I had left was some wings and some bony pieces. I took the skin off, this gelatinous skin. I peeled it off. I saved the meat throughout any bones. And then I fried the chicken skin in a little bit of oil, which not only rendered some of the fat that was on the skin, but made the skin into crackling. So once I had crackling, I took out the skin and put it aside in a little bowl, and I now had enough fat, which was a combination of my chicken fat and a little bit of oil I put in the pan to begin with. I measured it, by the way, because I wanted to tell you folks how to... it was 3 tablespoons plus a smidge of fat in the pan, and my fried rice recipe calls for 3 tablespoons, so it was perfect. You heat up your oil, you put in your rice, as I said, 3 cups of rice, toss it around in the very hot oil, and once you hear it start sizzling a little bit, start throwing in your additions. In my case, it was the diced green pepper, about a cup, maybe a little more. It was just my medium pepper that I cut up. But if you're using another vegetable, about a cut up of a cup vegetable. My chicken only amounted to a half a cup of chicken. So I diced up a little ham that I had in the fridge, and I added that to the chicken to make about a cup, a little bit more maybe. And I had about a cup worth of shallot and scallion mixed together. And then for this amount of rice, you want 3 eggs, which I beat up in a little bowl just to make scrambled eggs, beat up with about a half a teaspoon of sesame oil just to give it a little punch, and a big pinch of salt. So I add my additions, first the onion and the... actually, you can add everything. But I actually added the pepper and the onion, and I keep tossing and tossing my rice and keep cooking it until they tenderize a little bit. And then I added the ham and the chicken, and I kept tossing and tossing until everything is heated through very nicely. I push the rice to one side of the pan, and I use a very large skillet for this. If you have a wok, even better. And then I pour in my beaten eggs to the other side of the pan, and once they start setting, I push them around a bit, eventually working the scrambled egg into the rice, or the rice into the scrambled egg, You may have to chop up your egg, you know, with the spatula for a little bit, and then just mix it in nice. And that's it. I seasoned my plateful, which was a meal unto itself, with sriracha, hot sauce. I now discover sriracha has a large quantity of sugar in it. So I'm now going to search for something as nice as sriracha that doesn't have so much sugar. And I have to look at the label. I just bought some Korean chili paste. I have trouble pronouncing this word. Gwajang. Do you know how to say this, Marshall?
No, but Gwajang sounds more better to me.
Well, I mean, I could get up and read the label and see if I could do it, but I've done that before, and I do have trouble with it. In fact, Joanne has corrected me a few times when I've... So, great fried... Fried rice is just a great thing, I got to say. 3 cups of rice. Well, as I say, we split this because we were on our rice binge this weekend. We had the Hainanese chicken with rice, and then we had the day after fried rice, and today we're going to be back on no carbohydrates because when that, you know, I don't know about your diet because you do calories, which is way more sensible than what we're doing. But I have to say all my numbers are very good, says my doctor. And the diet has also, if you have arthritis, this is a good diet, I feel, because my arthritis is significantly better. Of course, a gluten-free person will tell you it's that I'm not eating gluten, and perhaps that is true.
You know, counting calories is an easy way to do it. It's not the best way to do it. I think whatever you...
No, it is the best. Marshall, I'm telling you, it's the best way to do it. After... You know, after 60 years of dieting, I can tell you that Weight Watchers style, you know, sensible eating, counting calories is a good thing. What's not good is if you count calories and all you're eating is pizza and Oreos.
Yeah, so that, yeah, but whatever, like you've been on this for a long time now, like I've been on mine, and whatever you can get into on a long-term basis, it actually isn't a diet anymore. It becomes part of your lifestyle.
It's true, but I'm serious, since I'm in charge of this part of our life, I'm seriously considering changing and maybe making Thanksgiving the change day. I do not intend to be low carb on Thanksgiving. In fact, I'm in charge of some of the carbohydrates myself. But, you know, I'm not losing weight on this ketogenic diet. I think it does good things otherwise. And I can continue being low carbohydrate, but as I've consulted with my doctor about this, we both agree that I need to eat fewer calories if I want to lose more weight. Because you can be ketogenic and still be on a very high calorie diet. I mean, if you're eating cream, butter, bacon, oil, you know, it adds up. So, and unless you're extremely active to burn off those calories, which I'm not, then, you know, you don't lose weight. So I guess I'm maintaining fine enough, even with my now 1 day a week splurge. But, you know, my splurge varies. I had ice cream the other day. That was a big splurge. Fortunately, it was really good ice cream. Now I got to find out where it was from. It was an ice cream cake for somebody's birthday. How can I say no to that?
I don't know how you can. I just
it's Carol's birthday. I, you know, would be disrespectful not to eat her cake.
That's right. That's always a great. That's right. Don't be disrespectful. That's always a good reason. That's a good reason.
It's a good excuse to go off your diet, right?
Yeah. But you mentioned ice cream cakes. I think of that. What's that? What was that ice cream store that used to sell this? It's the same ice cream cake, but they used to decorate it differently and call it like Fudgy the Whale, some of the snow. There was a
Carvel?
I think it was Carvel. Yeah, that's right.
It must have been Carvel. Yeah. Carvel's still in business.
Yeah.
Here in Brooklyn, we even have kosher Carvel.
He used to live up here in our neck of the woods in Pine Plains.
Mr. Carvel? Tom Carvel?
Yeah.
Remember him?
Well, I remember him years ago. We had him for an interview because he was doing something. And to get from Pine Plains to here should take about 30 minutes, okay? Well, with his driver, it took them an hour and a half. I don't know how they went. But it took
I didn't
an hour
know
and
he
half.
Lived in Pine Plains.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Oh, I met him a few times. Now, this is I think, very interesting. But, Häagen-Dazs was a revolutionary ice cream when it was created by, now I got to remember, Ruben Mattis is his name, Ruben Mattis. And I think Ruben Mattis was another Greek guy. Anyway, the revolutionary thing about Häagen-Dazs was this very, very low percentage of air. Most American ice cream is churned and legally can be called ice cream, even with as much as 50% air churned into it. So what happens is if you don't churn air into it, it can be very greasy, a full-fat ice cream. So Ruben Mattis figured out a way to make a full-fat, I mean a high-fat, low overrun, that's the air part, ice cream, and he used great flavorings. So it became a huge luxury product.
Yeah.
Tom Carvel had the same low overrun high fat ice cream. The only problem with Tom Carvel's ice cream was that the flavorings were not first rate. Yeah. So even though I always loved the texture of a soft serve Carvel, and I think Ruben Mattis took it one step further so that he could make hard ice cream with the same low overrun high fat. But Carvel was a very creative engineer, actually.
He was actually a very funny guy as well.
He was a nice man.
Yeah.
I only met Ruben Mattis when he already had Alzheimer's, except I didn't know he had Alzheimer's. I met him at a supermarket convention with his daughter, who was then, I only found out that day, running the company. And I was doing a radio program from this supermarket convention. And, I got there early so I could rustle up some guests for the radio. And I thought, oh, my, Ruben Mattis. Well, who could be a better guest than the guy who invented Häagen-Dazs, which at this point it was a big deal.
Right.
By the way, it was all a lie. It was made in the Bronx, had nothing to do with Denmark. He marketed it by making up this name Häagen-Dazs and then putting a map of Denmark on the cover. I think at some point they had to take the map of Denmark off the cover. Anyway, so I meet Ruben and his daughter, whose name first name I don't remember, and we're standing around talking. I said, oh, could you be on the program? And he said, yes. And he came with the daughter. Only then did I find out, when he was in front of a microphone, that he couldn't think anymore. And the daughter did all the talking. But, what are you going to do?
All right. Well, I want you to have a good Thanksgiving.
Well, and you too. I'm actually, even though I said I don't want to cook this year, I'm cooking this year, and actually I'm cooking today a little bit. I think if I do a little bit today and a little bit Tuesday, and then I do the drive on Wednesday, I can finish up on Thursday. I'll make the mashed potatoes on Thursday.
All right. Well, happy Thanksgiving.
All right. Well, everybody have a very happy, healthy, stay well Thanksgiving.
All right, Arthur. Speak to you next week. Take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com on the web.